Hello everybody, welcome and kumusta. Thank you for joining me. This is How, your occupational therapist. And welcome to Occupational Therapy Conversations. I am driving to work and it's always a good time to reflect when you are driving. So I thought I'd pick up this thought while driving. And the topic that I want to talk about today is all about these evidences, right? I have attended another online conversations, and this time they were talking about ECMO and they were saying that there are no evidences regarding occupational therapy and ECMO. I think the focus is so much more on ECMO, which is extracorporeal membranous oxygenation, and that's the wrong thing. There's no effectiveness of occupational therapy in ECMO because ECMO as a concern is not a concern of occupational therapy. You have to look for the problem that is caused by the ECMO. Let's look back at the ECMO again. Why is it there? The reason why is because you are replacing the function of the lungs and you wanted the blood to be oxygenated. And that's it. Technically, ECMO is an adaptive aid for the function of the lungs. And that's on an organ level. Now, when it comes to problems, you have to analyze the problems as it is and analyze the problems of the performance components. Definitely, ADLs is already a problem. They cannot do that. And you can't do the ADLs. Go back to the roots. What is the problem? It will be the performance components. The next question is, what would be the frame of reference when it comes to rehabilitation or intervention? And the frame of reference in an acute setting for this, which is technically critical care, would be a simple biomechanical frame of reference if you are dealing with problems of the body. When you're dealing with biomechanical frames of references, you look at four different areas of concerns. One is the range of motion. The next thing would be strength. The next thing would be endurance. And the next thing would be edema. There are very standard methods on how you address these things. In terms of strength, the person has lost their strength. That's because of a total immobility. And we can have some further physiological discussions about that in the future. The range of motion, do they suffer from contractures? If they are, then that's when you do the passive stretches. Yeah? Because passive stretches is more for the joint range. When you say PROM, passive ranges, you're talking about intervention focused on the range of motion, the joints. But if you want to stimulate those muscles, then you'd have to do muscle retraining and follow those principles starting from whatever strengthening activity that you need to do. And you have to understand the muscle grading of not just 0 to 5, but 0, 1, 2 minus 2, 2 plus, 3 minus 3, 3 plus 4 and 5. Because every level of strength, you will have a different type of activity that you need to do. Simple, isn't it? Now, the next thing is, what about the endurance level? This is the activity tolerance. And it is building up on a person's ability to engage and sustain their cardiorespiratory capability over a period of time. You need to stimulate the person to do something and you want to measure the length of time that the person is doing. Now, with ECMO and they're in critical care, they are totally debilitated in the sense that they can't even engage on prolonged activity. And the most basic things that they need to do is to challenge them in different positions. If they're lying down, building up activity tolerance would be sustaining that tolerance of being in an upright position. You need to do that because there will be lots of benefits. It's endurance, activity tolerance. You can do standing tolerance. You can do sitting tolerance. You can have wakefulness, but this is more on the cognitive tolerance. This is not physical dysfunction. Those are the things that you need to stimulate. When it comes to edema, Now, there is another problem, because the ideal intervention for edema, you can have compression would be one of them, if it is a physical dysfunction. However, there are some physiological changes that are happening because of the imbalances of the biochemistry, and it is bound for edema to happen, and it needed to be supplemented or actually primarily managed using fluid management in terms of medication. Fusuma, the classic biomechanical approach like bandaging or retrograde massage, it will not work. It will only be temporary. You can soften it, positioning, you can only do that, but it has to be managed, okay? So that is as simple as what that is. Now, this is biomechanical frame of reference. Now, do you need evidences for these things that it works? It's been published. It's well known. All you need to do is analyze the problem and just do it. The focus nowadays is all about effectiveness. And what is it? Early mobilization. Yes, that would be the next step. The next step, early mobilization and engagement in doing on some of the things would have been next stage, which would be the enabling activities. And these are some of the things that you can do. And you can do multiple things. If they can reach, they can grasp, they can release, then that's good. And what's an enabling activity for sitting? Leaning forward and back. What about practice moving those legs? It's almost on the borderline of junctive activities and enabling activities. That is very simple. Nobody pays attention to these things because there are some interventions that work. It's been happening even before the Second World War. The biomechanical frame of reference does not have a well-known proponent because it's old knowledge. It's a known knowledge to therapists that nobody can claim they are the proponent for it. It's almost like saying that walking is better for your health. You know, who's the proponent for that? Nobody, because it's just known. So these are evidence-based practice. The question, my question about it, and the simple approach. It's not the ECMO that's the problem, but the effect of the ECMO. When you are labeling the intervention, you need to focus and be specific about it. If your intervention is early mobilization, what is the problem? The problem is the patient cannot mobilize. How do you want the person to mobilize? That's the next question. You just mobilize them and move them. Okay? So that's it. So when your intervention is early mobilization, yes. Early mobilization, what mobilization? That's my concern. Mobility is movement. So early movement, good. Are you talking about walking mobilization? What about upper limb gross motor control retraining? That's early mobilization. Reach, grasp, and release. Is that what we mean by early mobilization? We need to define it a bit more. We need to be more specific. There's a lot of training. I've heard a lot of therapists using upper limb retraining. Well, it's going to be pointless when the trunk is not there, when the body is impaired, and everybody is going on the language of early mobilization, whether it's physio, whether it's occupational therapist. Who's doing the physiological task now? People are doing functional tasks. You know what's missing? The physiological rehab. Okay, the lungs. We can't deal much about that. What needs to happen in the lungs? It needs to expand and deflate. What's responsible for that? The diaphragm. How can you facilitate doing that? Do you need physical support of ventilator to do that? Or you need to exercise the person to do that? Because you have to exercise that breathing muscle. And how do you optimize that breathing muscle? You need to enable the person to be at the appropriate position for that. And what is the best way to do that? They need to be in an upright position. They cannot be on the chair. we can't demand for them to be standing because that will demand so much energy already. So the best way is to keep that trunk straight and get the person awake so that the person will willfully expand and deflate their lungs as an exercise. They need to do it as an exercise. What's the best way to do that in a critical care scenario? You want to look after them and do that in bed where the bed mattress is so bulky and it doesn't allow proper posture. It's not firm enough. You need to start working on getting the person in an upright, flat position. And the best way to do that is through the use of this tilt table, classic old school since the 50s. You put the body in an upright position and then slowly verticalize them, get the spine straight. If you sit the person and get them to do all of these things, the body is so stressed that it is looking after so many things. It's trying to manage postural control. It's trying to concentrate on using up all the other energies. All you need to do is focus and concentrate on that breathing. You need to optimize it. How do you optimize it? Allow the body in the situation where it can do that. And that will be through the use of a tilt table. I don't know why people are so aversive to using the tilt table. It's so easy. Biomechanical frame of reference is what we need. Okay? Simple. Now, physiological rehab, that's one we're talking about, right? Now, when it comes to movement, the common tendency is that people are asked to, it's going to be assistance of three, assistance of four, a lot of people handling the person, put them in an upright position, just challenge them. When we're doing that, we can only provide therapy for a few minutes at a time. And that was it. I'm going to come back the following day again and do that for a few minutes. The best and more efficient way of doing it is if you use a tilt table. Use a tilt table. And with that, it optimizes the respiratory capacity. It optimizes the ability of the lungs to do that. When you're doing retraining and postural control retraining, you sit them out. And again, there's a lot of demands for that. The body needs to have that feeling because every tension that happens around the body, all these back muscles, all these postural muscles, yeah, that is deep, that's under the trapezius muscle, yeah, the thoracospinal muscles, all of these muscles, these long muscles of the spine needed to be stimulated. And the best way to do that is when it is in an upright position. You cannot force the person to just put them in an upright and expect that there's going to be a quick result straight away. It is almost like without any training, you expect the person to do a marathon. It's unfair for the person, right? And when it comes to upper limb retraining, do you know the process of development? It is proximo-distal. These are the development. It is from deep to superficial. And when you're doing upper limb retraining, you are expecting that the person will develop fine motor control. It does not happen before the postural control and the proximal control takes place. So reach, grasp, release, upper limb dexterity. So the reach will happen first. The grasp will follow after. The release will happen. And if the muscles aren't strong, then you have to stimulate that movement. What is a best way to stimulate the muscles? You need to stimulate the proprioceptors. This is where the proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation comes in. Because if you are expecting for the muscle to actually contract, it needs, for it to contract, it needs the calcium to release these troponin and tropomyosin, yeah, the actin and, you know, the actin filaments, yeah, the thick and the thin filaments of the sarcomere. But before these calcium can be released, it needed acetylcholine. Where would the acetylcholine be coming from? It will be coming from a nerve stimulation. How would the nerve stimulation be stimulated? One, it comes from the brain. The other way is you can facilitate stimulation of the nerve by stimulating the muscle itself, the muscle spindle, the Golgi tendon organs, the Pacinian corpuscles. And when you stimulate these muscles, then you're stimulating the nerves. And when you stimulate these nerves, you are releasing acetylcholine, which will enable the calcium to be released. And once you release the calcium, you will release the troponin. It's very, very simple. The problem then is that despite the stimulation, what happens? Why is it that they're not doing it still? Obviously, the problem is because of the immobility which we have contributed to, because we have not been involved very early. There is a mitochondrial decay. And the mitochondria is the one that produces the adenosine triphosphate. And this is what is required to actually, ATP would be the energy that you would require. You break it down into a phosphate, into an ADP. And every time there is a release of phosphate, then there is an energy. And that's the one that will enable all of these cross references and muscle movement. Okay? It's simple. And yet we are looking back to the basics, the very foundation that I do not seem to see from a lot of therapists. A lot of therapists are arguing on the second stage, on the second level. I am expecting some action on the very foundation. And this is basic physiotherapy. This is physiotherapy as I understand it. But what's happening is the physiotherapy is doing the second level. Well, in fact, that second level should be the occupational therapist who should be doing that. Who is addressing these bottom concerns? It is an uncomfortable discussion, guys. This is not a very, very easy conversation. And I don't like to say it. I'm trying to be quiet about this. But I can't be quiet because people do not seem to understand their roles. That's the priority we need in intensive care. A clarity on which problem is which. Let's analyze the problem and then let's address the problem based on the very basic rehabilitation techniques that has been established way before the First World War. What happens? What are the treatments? First would be biomechanical frame of reference. Yeah. Physical therapy is so known to that. Occupational therapists were an expert on that too. Good. The second thing would have been, the next thing that came out was proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. Now there is this science that came about. And then the Bobath came about. Yeah. This is 50s. And then the Brunstrom came about. And then the Rud approach came about, okay? All stimulation, because all of these, what I'm talking about, it's there. It's an old science, but because it's old, nobody wants to pay attention to it. A lot of people are focusing on current research, right? And they're looking at what's happening, research, research, current research. But I bet you very few people who's looking into this current research, they have not looked into the foundational knowledge and information that should be the groundwork where the improvements of research should be coming from. Everybody starting on the research, which is wrong. Research is happening as a refinement of the foundation knowledge. But how many knows, really knows, and are addressing the intervention based on the functional or physiological aspect? And this is just going round and round and round and round, and I cannot, and it's so loud in my head, and I cannot get a platform where people will listen. So this is the platform for it. You happy? Good. You learned something? Good. You didn't learn anything? Fine. But I'm not gonna stop talking about this. This is a rant involving occupational therapy. Riot. Thank you. Until next time, guys. Bye.